takes one Fab Four to review another Fab Four. Welcome, listeners, to a very special episode of Mars on Life, episode 191. I am one of your co-hosts, Ryan Mancini. There's Andrew. Say hi, Andrew.
What's up, everyone?
And we've got some surprises along the way. Gentlemen, reintroduce yourselves.
I've only been gone 2 weeks. Did we really gain that many followers in 2 weeks, Ryan? Like, come on.
I had a lot of content since
I wasn't
then,
here but... 2 weeks because my dog drowned because I wasn't watching him, everybody. So, hello, I'm back. I'm coping. I'm not crying every day as I was, but it still comes in waves. So I'm trying to deal with it. And yes, if you've forgotten me, then fuck you.
We can never forget you. Also, hi, I'm here.
There we go.
Yeah, gentlemen, it's been a little bit. Decided to take a brief hiatus away from the show to mainly focus on work and just other personal matters, but I'm glad to be back. I know this was a very, very anticipated topic by the pilot of this starship. So we have, if the intro didn't already give it away, we have some news concerning little kind of indie band. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of them. like super slept on, you know. I mean, Ryan, if you want to go ahead and introduce it, we could just kind of jump right into it. But this was a point of contention in episodes past. And now that we finally reached the day when this song has officially come out, we can now see if those contentions even hold true now that we've actually listened to it. So,
yes. So, a little bit of a brief explainer. So I believe this was what, like 170 that we talked first about, what was described by Sir Paul McCartney as, the final Beatles song, the last Beatles song. And there was a lot of speculation at the time as to what the song was going to be. I know that I had mentioned prior that they had done something similar to this back in the 90s when they released the anthology albums. They had taken a few demos belonging to John Lennon and decided, you know, oh, we'll make some music around it. And then made two songs, one of which I think I said previously was an already released John Lennon song. Technically it was, but it was released posthumously in the late 80s. And it accompanied this documentary about John Lennon called Imagine. Surprise, surprise. And so that was where I had first heard of it. And then, of course, there's this news. And you're thinking, okay, the last Beatles song. Then you have the other big elephant in the room, which is, oh, we're going to use AI to perfect the song. Ooh. AI.
Ooh.
AI in the middle of strikes regarding AI and residuals and paying your staff. Okay. Paying your crew. So time goes on. We all have a merry time.
More like Paul McFuck you.
Hey, that's how...
I still maintain that the best version of the Beatles was the Beatles done by the Powerpuff Girls in the
Beatles
episode, which was Mojo Jojo, Princess Morbucks, Fuzzy Lumpkin, I think his name was, and him. Until they were ruined by, what is it, Monko Ono or whatever her name was?
Yeah.
I hate
them. I remember that.
I can't tell. I'm not a fan of them. I think that they are overhyped, and I mean they were culturally significant at their time as a part of the counterculture movement and part of the British invasion, but like not that great, guys. I don't see it. I don't see it.
So here I wanted to just come on the show and take a neutral stance. I did not grow up with the Beatles, nor did I grow up with parents who really idolized the Beatles other than just they existed. And the fifth member was a raging lunatic, or at least she belted out more than she sung. I don't know. I can't really grasp Ryan's emotion here other than I'm guessing you wanted to find some sort of solace in this coming out and hopefully, you know, maybe even like it. But I know that in terms of how it was made and what we discussed previously, there's a lot to dislike about it to not be able to disconnect it from the fact that the IP is the Beatles, a band that you hold in really high regard. So I feel like that there's two ways you can look at this. It's a multi-pronged approach. You can look at it objectively. If the song is good, just if it's written well, if it's produced well, if it sounds good, and subjectively, if it sounds like a good song to you. I'm assuming we all four listened to it prior to recording today. The song called Now and Then, at the time of this recording, released 10 hours ago, currently sits at 3.1 million views. And it's sure to go up a lot more. It sits at number 2 on trending.
On YouTube?
On YouTube, yeah.
Okay.
On YouTube.
Okay.
So I'm not splice the song in bits and pieces that will hopefully not warrant us a DMCA claim. However, I feel like we can just kind of jump into it and kind of give our thoughts about it and then just kind of dissect it from there.
Well, to start off, I'm curious, because I know I sent both to all three of you, the prior two songs that they did post John's death, Free as a Bird and Real Love. And I'm curious, actually, not to throw my question before the other question regarding this current song, but what did you all think of those two songs? Obviously, I do realize I'm talking to three, for the most part, non-Beatles fans the way that I am, but at the same time, they're still...
Are these two songs supposed to be like samplings that went into this song as sort of like the inspiration for it, or is it just two songs that they did and that's what they're trying to emulate with this song now?
It is something they're trying to emulate, but they're all three unique songs. Mm, okay. The difference, or the common thread in each one, is that I believe all three of them start off as demos from John Lennon. So ultimately, and obviously it gets a little harder with the third song when it comes to George Harrison, but the heart of each song, if you will, is you at least have audio from the 70s of John Lennon, which... That's the latest you can get anything. Just shy of just getting an AI John Lennon voice, which would be, you know, just wrong, frankly. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. What did you guys think of those two songs?
The one thing that happened that I didn't want to happen is happening, where now my YouTube algorithm is showing me Beatles shit, and I didn't want that. So you're to blame for this, Mancini.
Oh, a curse.
I have to retrain my algorithm. Thank you.
That was a horrible fate.
I kind of did it, but it's like, to me, it was just like, it's elevator music. It's not anything that's special. It's not catchy. It's pleasant enough. It's not something that I would like avoid listening to. I wouldn't change the radio station or hop out the elevator early to avoid it. But it's like, it's... Maybe it's the fact that we live in an era where music is so different. Maybe this would have been a smash hit if it was released back when Johnny O was still alive. It's nothing special. None of these songs are special. Like, Now and Then, why the fuck is it 4 minutes long? Why is it that long?
1 minute for each Beatle. That long.
And like, it's just, my only memory of listening to the Beatles is when Paul McCartney did his Super Bowl performance.
Oh, geez.
And like, I thought the Who were bad. Nah,
So you just have bad experiences with the Beatles, whereas
good.
Someone like Mancini would probably, I'm not sure what you happened to listen to in middle school and high school. We all owned an iPod Touch at one point. I'm sure you listened. Oh, yeah.
I bought mine when they were being discontinued. So
I'm sure, Ryan, in some way, shape, or form, you grew up with this music more so than the three of us did. And that's why you hold it in more of a high regard.
Yes.
And yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the Beatles for me are, I mean, I'll straight up say it. Like, they're probably my favorite musical group. The story of the Beatles.
All over them.
The what?
As I shit all over them.
That's okay. I mean, the Beatles, believe me, there is a lot of overhype, but at the same time, and obviously I do amount this to two things. One, growing up with them, but also just the fact that, like, there is so much to the mythology of them, their history, that it's, you know, it's almost like one of those, I don't know, film scripts that you're like, wow, how could this ever be written? Like, there is a real story to the Beatles with their music, with their personal lives, their professional lives, and everything that came out of even just their breaking up, and then what their lives have been like since. It's, you know, on one hand, there's a lot of camaraderie and a lot of goofiness and a lot of majesty, but then there's also a lot of tragedy. So, and unfortunately, since George Harrison's death, it's just been, how do we make another buck? And, you know, with the release of something like this, you know, I said it previously that the release of a song like this really goes back to the number one fundamental issue with releasing Beatles music post 1980, which is, you have a demo by John Lennon, and this isn't my review of the song, by the way, but just sort of the precursor to all this, and this applies to the other two songs as well. Yes, you have a recording of the living voice of John Lennon, who, you ask me, I'd straight up say I think the guy, despite all of his problems, despite all of his flaws, I personally think the guy was a genius. Both musically, artistically, socially, politically, you name it. However, when you start saying, you know, oh, we're going to have our own Beatles songs and it's 1993. Wait, what? How do you do that? You know, like, it's always about, it's four guys. That's why the talk of a reunion prior to John's death was so hyped, even though it was like this niche thing of, oh, maybe it won't happen, maybe it will. And then once John died, it, for millions of people, it pretty much cemented the reality that we are never going to see these four together again. And that's just the way life now is. And with the passing of George Harrison in 2001 from cancer, similar deal. Like, as cool as it was to see the three of them in the 90s, it was like, you guys look like old musicians, and John Lennon's not there, and he's the one everybody loved. So,
question.
And
Do you think that the Beatles is John Lennon?
No.
Okay.
No. That being said,
in the same vein, why do you think that Queen was able to move on beyond Freddie Mercury with Adam Lambert and still have performance as well?
Wait, what was the first half of that question?
Why do you think that Queen, even after Freddie Mercury's passing, which is very similar tragic, not similar, but both tragic circumstances.
Oh, yeah.
The band is gone. Why do you think Queen has been able to still find some relative amount of success and still be able to move on past Freddie Mercury and continue their career while the Beatles are like, oh, we're done. They tried, but like, people kind of disregarded it.
Yeah.
Not in the same way that, like, when Adam Lambert came on the scene, it kind of revitalized the presence of the band to a point where even, like, a lot of, like, really big fans still really like hearing Adam Lambert perform.
It's tricky, because I know every band is very particular when it comes to new members or how to go on after someone has died. You know, Queen, and I'll even throw the Eagles into the equation. They're both good examples where they kept going after not only a living member had died, but I emphasize, a living member. Randy Meisner dying this year, he was one of the original four Eagles. He eventually at one point left the band. So I don't think he ever performed with them ever again, but if he ever did, it would be the Eagles and Randy Meisner, which I know is what happened when they had Bernie Ledden join them. He was also one of the original four, and when I saw them in concert, it was like, it's the Eagles and Bernie Ledden, even though he was a former Eagle, technically. And with Queen, I mean, I respect them for at least continuing on, but they do make it clear, you know, Queen and Adam Lambert, you know, it's kind of like no one can ever replace Freddie Mercury, especially for a band where, I mean, obviously you got to have Brian May, but I mean, for one thing, you don't have John Deacon. Ouch. You don't have John Deacon because he's just quit the life of fame and was like, Freddie Mercury's death, the life of fame, I'm done with it. I'm just going to live in the English countryside. With the Beatles, obviously all four of them are Beatles, but the majesty is the four of them together, the mystique, the you know, I don't want to say the magic, but what comes about when you have the four of them together, and especially when, you know, you have Paul McCartney, who's very conventional, Ringo rolls with the punches, George has his flavor, and John has his vision. And it's that clash of ideas that creates, you know, has created so much music that arguably none of it should work. None of it. However, it does, at least in my opinion. So I think it's a lot harder to continue on and say, well, you know, we have to go on without John. Because for one thing, they were already broken up. And for another thing, you know, they really held it that the four of us together, we are the Beatles. We can't say, if the three of us go out on stage, we can't say, you know, oh, we're touring together because we're the Beatles and it's all wonderful. Hey, Paul and Ringo, let's go do this and I'll get Ravi Shankar out here. Like, no, they're not gonna do that. Because they cared that much about each other as well. And again, it's unique with every band.
I do like that the Beatles had, I don't forget if it was their original drummer, Pete Best. When Pete Best was the original Beatles drummer, or one of the first ones. And when he left the band, he came out with an album called Best of the Beatles that I forgot if it was like number one or something, but the Beatles got pissed off because like, what the fuck? Like, so
he was releasing his own highlight reel, even though it was his own thing.
Yep. Best of the Beatles.
I love that.
You know, the thing about this song, I don't like...
the line, though. He is best of the Beatles.
Yeah. I don't know if there's a lawsuit or something, but all-time troll for one of the greatest self-important bands. Influential, but... Mm-hmm. You know, the thing with this song, I hate the hype around it. I actually thought it was fine. I feel like, oh, it's easy to sound like you're smart and good if you go dark. Like, I don't know that much about music, but like minor chords or something, it was like melancholy, so it's like... Anything that's melancholy, you know, oh, like dark Batman or like dark, etc. You know, like any version that's dark, people like. And I liked it too. So I got that from the song. And the 90s songs, you know, one of them, I mix them up. I thought Real Love kind of sounded familiar to this one. The other one, Free as a Bird, sounded like a Radiohead ripoff of the 90s. But the thing about the song is I hate the way it was hyped up because, you know, I was half expecting like, Microsoft Sam into John Lennon's voice or something. Like, I wasn't sure to expect because they're like AI. I guess like it kind of like realizing that it's actually John Lennon's voice and they just used AI to separate the piano he was playing in like the shitty 70s recording from his voice makes me feel better about it. It's not like they just totally typed lyrics in a ChatGPT and said, can you make this in Lennon? So I feel like that makes it feel a bit more authentic and a bit more true, but it's just like typical Beatles to just be like so self-important. I saw a billboard for this when I was driving around Cambridge, and I'm like, are you serious? Who
wow.
has a, yeah. I'm like, this is too much. Paul McCartney, why does he care about making more money at this point? Like Ringo Starr minds his own business. So I think the hype kind of pissed me off. And I have to say, I feel like this is like one of the last bands in music history that can get away with this kind of behavior. I suppose the only other one, the modern comparison, would be Taylor Swift re-releasing her same albums. So I guess she's our modern day equivalent of how big the Beatles think they are. But I think just the song was good, but I think the hype kind of ruined it for me because I'm like, oh, great. They reminded us how self-important they are.
I was going to say that was one of the major factors of our previous discussion. We were wondering if this was going to be written in ChatGPT. And I got to be honest, upon listening to the song a couple times, I didn't sense any of that. You know, I didn't sense any of the Microsoft Sam shenanigans with typing lyrics into a chat box and having it get spit out in whatever Beatle it was voice. I will say, however, objectively, and by objectively, I mean any of us can pull up the lyrics right now and take a look at it.
Oh, yeah.
I do kind of like the running joke of Ringo just getting sacked, because literally all his contribution to the song, at least from what I can see in text anyway, is Ringo Starr outro, good one. He doesn't do any singing. He doesn't have any lines other than that. The lyrics are, as Drew said, yeah, very melancholy. And honestly, I think when I took a look at it as someone, or when I took a listen to it as someone who didn't grow up with the Beatles, as I've stated, the only real frame of reference that I had was obviously the discussion that we're having now and the song on YouTube, to which every comment that wasn't the, hey, I'm 14 and think I'm self-important Beatles fan, this is the greatest music ever Beatles fan, quote unquote, were comments of, it really, were comments, I would say, old souls. I mean, people who either grew up with the Beatles or, you know, potentially sons and daughters of parents who grew up with the Beatles. And I just, you know, I can't, I gotta call a spade here and say that it was actually pretty heartwarming to read. You know, you have a lot of people who thought that in the 80s, it being over, you know, this was the last time we were going to see anything Beatles related, at least as a quartet. And I think this song to some people is very important as much as we probably think it isn't. And maybe it's because we're the wrong generation to appreciate it. I don't know. You know, I can't help but think that someone who attended Live Aid way back when would have a different opinion to someone who's going to a Taylor Swift concert now, experiencing it for the first time. Like, you know, you have artists that are products of their generations. And to Matt's point, it is truly amazing how it spanned multiple, like they spanned multiple decades and they were still important. You would have expected maybe a 5-year shelf life at best. But as I said, you know, they were a band that could create a song, define a genre, and set the bar while they were at it. And that's, you know, you can't say that about a lot of artists or respective bands. Subjectively, I do think that it did sound very nice. I'm a big fan of piano and soft guitar, but I will say I'm putting all my money on black here when I say that this will absolutely be sampled on TikTok. Like it has just enough of that melancholiness where, I mean, you thought that Billie Eilish in Barbie was overused on TikTok. I mean, this is, I don't think that it's going to be used by boomers or Gen Xers on TikTok. I mean, it may be, assuming that that generation even uses TikTok compared to us Zoomers and Millennials. But I get the feeling that this is, you're going to see a lot of now and then sampling. And really, I wonder how that's going to look in terms of DMCA claims. Like, can they claim this song? It is technically AI. I wonder. But other than that, I mean, I gotta say, it was an enjoyable listen for its soft melody. But of course, that's not why we're here. We want to know what you think. Did you like it?
Wait, did Matt talk about what he thought?
Well, he said that he didn't. Matt, just refresh my memory.
Matt's trying to get it on vinyl.
I got this like bridge to tell you. 8 tracks.
I thought it was like, again, why is it 4 minutes long? Why did it have to be that long?
That's every song.
I will say, also, I forgot to add, I forgot to add this. Mm-hmm. I will say that if it attempted to capture the melancholiness of Paul and Ringo stapling together audio bits of George and John in an attempt to bring all four of them together in an effort to grandstand the simple message of, hey, I miss my friends, I miss my fellow bandmates. That's one thing. Okay, I believe in pathos wholeheartedly. However, if they did do this for a quick buck, then there's a problem, obviously. That's something I can't get behind. It seems as though people in the comments, at least as of now, are enjoying the song enough and have enough of an emotional takeaway that it's impacting them for the good. Let's check back at the end of the year to see if this is the truly final Beatles song, because I don't believe it. I feel like if they've mastered quote unquote this with AI, they're not going to stop. Because it's the music industry, why would they?
Yeah.
Well, and also, for a long while now, even prior, or maybe around, if not at the point that the song was announced, there was a lot of chatter online of like, oh, is this what's it called? Carnival of Light, which was recorded during the Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band sessions. And it was intended to be part of the anthology in the 90s, but George Harrison vetoed it. So he approved the other two songs, but he didn't allow Carnival of Light. So there's still at least one song out there that theoretically, if you wanted to say this is the last song, and arguably,
oh, Jesus,
it's even more of a Beatles song. Like, and I know this is really getting into the weeds, and even I feel too presses glasses against Bridge of Nose nerdy when I say this, but like, if you want like a true Beatles song, you have it in their prime, in their heyday, at their absolute peak with Sgt. Pepper, you know, and it's something they recorded when all four of them were alive and they were all under the age of 30. Like, but c'est la vie, we got what we got.
I wouldn't put it past them to Tupac this and come out with albums, you know, like, you know, Sgt. Pepper's the hidden, like, you know, the lost tracks or some bullshit, like, mm-hmm. Leave it to the Beatles to start this. I mean, Taylor Swift, I suppose, is an innovator in re-releasing her albums for her rights because she's not rich enough already. And she's changing a few things and updating the sound. But I just hope that people aren't giving the Beatles credit for doing this, because like, they made Tupac a whole new life after he died. It's been like a ton of artists that like, I guess, have had careers after they exist. So I get the sense that the Beatles, like, I watched the 12-minute YouTube movie on this that came out before, which basically played the whole song in different excerpts. And it's like, you know, I think the whole thing is just like, the Beatles are so, I like them, but like, they're so self-important. And it's just like, I think when you're, it's very off-putting, especially to like younger people. When I see a damn billboard, I can't imagine like young kids playing guitar and stuff. Rock music is dead today. There's no rock bands really that are that big anymore. Mm. But, you know, that attitude doesn't fly. Like, I feel like Taylor Swift is too big, I suppose, to see the backlash, but there is backlash for people saying, like, why is she re-releasing the same songs? And I just feel like with the Beatles, if they should have just released this when they announced the song was done. The YouTube documentary shows that they came back in the studio in 2020 for Ringo to play a super simple drum track. And then Paul was like, oh, I could take over George's guitar bit, you know, because, you know, Paul wants to do it all. So, like, why couldn't they just release this when they announced it? Like, we had 7 months of hype for this. So that's what I'm still stuck on that.
They could have released it silently, too. I'm not saying go like the DistroKid, you know, single route of like independently releasing it outside of any sort of affiliation other than it's the Beatles. But I don't know. I feel like if they didn't spend monstrous amounts of time and money on advertising it, you could have gotten... I feel like you would have gotten more of an appreciation of, hey, this is an experiment and we're explicitly labeling it as such. Now, because you've spent all this time and money hyping it up, it being the last Beatles song, okay, well, now you're at a two-way street. Is this really the last Beatles song? If it is, okay, you kind of had a good note to send on based off of the opinions I've been reading so far. But if it isn't, well, now you're just kind of scraping the barrel for any sort of cash you can find, because again, if they would have released this as an independent experiment and not hyped it up as being the last Beatles song, they wouldn't have screwed themselves over if hypothetically this song were to work out and in the future think, hey, since that AI song worked, why not make more AI songs? And I'm not saying that, you know, Matt, I understand your contention with AI and I'm right there with you, where I believe it is sort of a destructive
job, yo.
Well, right, exactly. I'm not in support of that sort of human replacement. Okay, if all they wanted to do was tack on 70s and 80s audio interspersed with 2023 audio, which is, I'm assuming, what they did, and it looks like it's what they did, then that's fine. You know, anybody with any idiot with GarageBand can do that.
Hey, I'm an idiot with GarageBand.
Yeah, me too.
But at the same time, you screw yourselves being the Beatles, you screw up that image of releasing something of quality because you're going to do it over and over because it worked out. Okay, I don't believe for a second that this is the last Beatles song. I don't know if any of you believe it, but if it is, it's not a bad note to end on. Just hope that Paul, I really hate to say this, but either Paul dies and all his bad ideas of making more music die with him, or someone else takes the helm, or a third option, I guess, millions of people take the helm and realize that, well, if the Beatles could actually produce a Beatles AI song, what's stopping us average people from releasing Beatles AI songs,
or like the last Led Zeppelin song or something like that? Like, that's coming.
Are we gonna look back at this and like realize that Paul McCartney, in his greed and his stupidity, put the final nail in the music industry by doing it? It's like, this is successful. Record companies are like, oh shit, like, let's just do that. We don't need people.
Yeah,
like, what if in the middle of actors fighting for their protection of their jobs, in the middle of writers fighting to protect their jobs, fucking Paul McCartney decides, I'm better than you all and I can just do this AI with damn the consequences. Mm-hmm. Like, it's disrespectful to art, I think, to do it. And I feel he's gotten so big and he's got so much money that he just doesn't fucking care. I just think AI use in any and all art forms besides like spell check, grammar, like the very basic stuff.
So my follow-up question was, did Paul, and I'm assuming, did Ringo have any other affiliation music-wise besides that one outro bit?
I mean, I don't know the full 95 sessions, but they recorded stuff, and Paul, there's footage, or Paul talks about how he brought in an orchestra, and he like was conducting them. And, you know, the part of it was like, we didn't tell them what it was. They thought it was just a Paul McCartney project, not the last Beatles song. So Paul was composing this, and it's a little kind of fucked up that Paul at one point was just like, oh, like, I just finished George's guitar parts. And also, something that is interesting in that 12-minute documentary is that Paul, throughout it, defends it by, he's like, I think John would have liked this. I think George would have liked this. I think he says that, like, several times throughout the 12 minutes, and it's like,
right.
He's like, you know, the Beatles were always about technology, and it's interspersed with, like,
and he's yellow, right.
Yellow submarine clips and things like that. And, you know, so you're just like, okay, you're showing us how forward thinking they were in the 60s. But it's all, to me, it's just like, does Paul feel bad a little? Because he must have says like three times in the thing, like, I think John would have liked it. Or I think George would have said, do
he's
it.
He's convincing himself that John would have liked it. He's making excuses.
If you're utilizing your old bandmates' audio as a way of preserving, if you're using technology to preserve the memories of your former bandmates, I don't have a problem with that whatsoever. But if this AI hodgepodge is getting too much of an undertaking that they have to make this whole song out of AI and thus completely fuck over the entire music industry's expectations of what makes a good song, because again, outside of the whole AI fiasco, there's a lot of people thinking that this is a good final song. Is it? Again, subjectivity kind of has to win the day here. And even though I've been a main detractor against subjectivity in the arts, I kind of have to stand with the people that get more out of it than I do when they look at this song and just tears are in their eyes. So,
speaking of which, I still got to give my thoughts.
Well, that was the end of my thought because okay. I haven't been here. Let me get up on my soapbox. I'm back. I'm kidding.
Well deserved. I you do raise an excellent point with, and hopefully Zoom doesn't freak out on me like it's been doing tonight. This is rare. With the point of melancholy, you're 100% right. Like, there is this melancholic feel to it that, frankly, I'm getting to a point where when Beatles songs or just Paul McCartney in general tries to be melancholic with Beatles music, and I totally understand why. And it's not even just Beatles music. He's done it in his own career, too. I know he wrote, I think the song's called Here Today, which was a song that was a tribute to John Lennon. And it honestly, it's a good song. In hindsight, though, it's laid the groundwork for songs like this and even Free as a Bird, which, in my opinion, this new song is like a sister song to that, where it's the same type of melancholy where, I mean, going back to the Now and Then lyrics, you know, now and then I miss you. Oh, now and then. I want you to be there for me, always to return to me. And yeah, obviously, the Beatles are known for their love songs. You know, I'll admit, I do get a kick out of listening to their love songs. However, with the passing of at least two of their bandmates, you know, you can't hear this stuff and not think of, I miss my friend. I terribly miss my friend. And even Free as a Bird, as much as that's a song that I feel like John was going for something else, and then all of a sudden Paul and George sing the lyrics, whatever happened to the life that we once knew, can we really live without each other? Where did we lose the touch that seemed to mean so much? It always made me feel so... And then John says, free as a bird. So, the melancholy, I think, it could have done without it. Just because, you know what? When the Beatles did end, and their last song was literally called The End, it wasn't somber. It wasn't, I miss my friend. It wasn't anything that pulled at your heartstrings. It was a bombastic celebration. You know, it's the song that sent the message home of what the Beatles were about by the end. You know, literally... And in the end, the love you take is, you think I'd know this by now, is equal to the love you make, you know, and And granted, it's not even technically their last song. After that, there's a 12-second song called Her Majesty that Paul sings. So, and then that's it. That's the end. That's it's over. Two words to sum up this song, frankly. Pretty generic.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, it's John Lennon on a scratchy demo, 38 years old, and 80-something-year-old Paul McCartney sounding as authoritative as he's always been. And you do get a twang of George Harrison, but apparently that's finished up by Paul, which, you know, again, goes back to my question that I asked before, and I've asked any and everybody, which is, where is George's input, really? And even to the point, Sebastian, that you raised, or one of you guys raised it, like, where's Ringo in all this? Like, he's playing the drums, but, like, where... To answer that, he wasn't a singer. They for the longest time, they didn't want him to sing songs. He'd write songs, and they'd be like, no, just no. And even George, they were that way, but John was typically the one that championed George. He was like, you know, and I... frankly love George's stuff on the Beatles. I love frankly he had the second best solo career out of the bunch of them, even though everyone gives Paul McCartney all the praise in the world. Frankly, I heard this song and was like, okay, Paul, you need to get out of the James Bond music studio, because you're clearly still living your live and let die days 50 years later. Like, get over yourself. I mean, catchy, sure. Is it great to hear new music by John Lennon that we've never heard? Absolutely. But to say it's the last Beatles song, or to be like, oh, this is groundbreaking, this is revolutionary, no pun intended. I mean, I'll just quote a Beatles fan who's been listening to their music for 60 years. I don't know what to think of it. Kind of monotonous. Don't like the background vocals. It's just weird. That is a direct quote from my mother. And, you know, and this actually goes back to a question that was asked to me about my love for the Beatles and listening to them. And especially, you know, why that, you know, there is the part of it that's like, oh, I love their music because it's something I grew up listening to. I do still think, you know, the sound, there is a unique sound, and there's also a harmony to them that you don't always get to hear. They tried to force that multiple times later on, especially with these last three songs, and none of it comes as close as some of their harmonizing in the past. But beyond the sound, beyond the personality, beyond the history, the other reason why is quite simply, this is something that my mom and I have had something to bond over pretty much for half the time she's been listening to the Beatles. So, it's, you know, and given the fact that we are close, given the fact that I'm also born on her birthday, which, I saw this really amazing, I shouldn't say amazing, but it definitely resonated with me, this quote from Sean Lennon, where he basically said, I was born on his birthday, so if you think about it, it's kind of like we're twins. And my mom's the closest that I have to a twin, really. So sharing this with her is special. And but the song is not. I mean, it's just not. I am sorry.
There we go.
Like, yeah. It, you know, like I said it already. The end set it off. It was a celebration. It was, mm-hmm. It's one of Ringo's best drum solos as part of the Beatles. He's phenomenal in that song. You know, and even Paul. Paul, it's as deep-throated... I'm trying to be a black musician, but I'm as white as they come, and I'm going to belt it out. And John being as, I have a message, damn it, and I'm going to end it with this. And George flaring that guitar, you know, that the end was the end, not Now and Then or Free as a Bird or Real Love. And they even did, I think, a third kind of, not Frankenstein, but they did kind of something else that was sort of Beatles soundy with the anthology, I think called A Beginning. And it's just a little like melody,
I guess, you know, they didn't, I guess, like, it's funny to think like how, you know, crazy Yoko Ono didn't come up with like Imagine Part Two. Like, so like, to me, it's like, I kind of think like, if this is like the how far Paul McCartney will go, then I don't think it's too bad, because Paul McCartney's the kind of, he's done collaborations with Kanye West in the past few years. He's gone a little off the deep end. I saw he was just touring 2 weeks ago and he's a skeleton. So it's, for me, it's like, I, when this guy dies, you know, I don't know. This guy's just like, I can't think of anybody else other than Taylor Swift who I've seen in the music world who's just so obsessed with like money and legacy. And yeah, Ringo is just cool as a cucumber. So like, yeah, now you're making me think twice, because I was going to come on here and said I kind of liked it.
If you liked it, you liked it.
I was going to say, the only reason I like it is from the perspective of an ignorant person, someone who has no knowledge of the Beatles, and I guess maybe someone who was a bit drawn into the pathos of how it affected other people. And if that's what others truly got from it, that's fine. Myself, personally, I will not be playing this song on repeat. It is not my favorite song.
Give me the aux chord.
Yeah. Give me the aux chord. Yeah. And, and quite frankly, I don't think it's really up there with the list of songs that you would see at a Super Bowl halftime show in their prime. I will specify that, in their prime, because nowadays it's dog shit. I don't think that this song ranks up there, or will rank up there, as being a song to be remembered, other than the circumstances surrounding it alone. You know, they could have released this January 1st of 2024, a new start. Ooh, but I don't know. November 2nd, I'll give it to you. Again, it had to be under the right subtext. If they would have released it as an experimental single or EP, that's fine. I just wish that the hype train wasn't pulling out of the station at 70 miles per hour, because those expectations, I'm sure that there were expectations that were not met. You know, if they were to hype this song up as if it were to be, you know, The End Part Two, Boogaloo, and have it go out on a momentous note, I'd venture to guess that a lot of people were disappointed when they heard the first 3 seconds of the song, when they realized, oh, it's one of those songs, huh? Okay. Well, I don't know. I take solace in the, and feel content that I won't ever have to listen to this song again. Not that I hated it. It's just, it is not a groundbreaking achievement in the field of music. I don't want to be crucified when I say that because of the name, but at the same time, as Matt said, you like what you like, and it's just okay.
Well, don't put it past Paul to push it hard. I mean, not to go on a super tangent, but when Paul McCartney played the Super Bowl, as Matt was mentioning, he had 4 songs to play, you know, the man of the Beatles and of his solo career. And he played, you know, the set list included Hey Jude, Live and Let Die, and Get Back. But he opened it with Drive My Car, which if you listen to all of the Beatles music, you're like, you know, like, what the hell is this song? Like, so like, Paul is also not shy about pushing some bullshit that he probably likes that nobody else likes. So
mumbled through his whole performance. It was literally just mumbling an old, you know, man ramble on the stage.
I have to say, I did see him live 6 or 7 years ago at Dodger Stadium, and I had a great time. Although he does give very strong old man energy, you know, stiff as a brick. During Live and Let Die, they had fireworks and, you know, they acted like it was a metal show, and it's like, come on.
But they didn't need to try with a song like that. Like, everyone knows how popular that song is, and I'd venture to guess that even if you don't know the lyrics, you at least know the score. So yeah, but, you know, if you're gonna shoehorn some dog shit, the thing is, it's like, if you think for a second that every Beatles song is good, you're wrong. And it's not even the fact that, like, oh, right. Ringo wrote it. You know, let's air this. No, it's one of, you have popular songs from the Beatles, and you have songs that, I don't know, I guess didn't chart, didn't place, but it's still technically a Beatles IP. Does that give you the right to play it and perform it? Sure. I mean, it's technically your music, but Drew's absolutely right. Why would you lead with three bangers? Or I don't know how he leaded it, but
he led with Drive My Car, which is like the most obscure. Yeah, exactly. So it's like this guy.
Elmo covered that song. Elmo. Oh, the Muppet Elmo. Like, it's.
I guess the point, I'm not, like, I wouldn't put it past Paul to promote some bullshit. I also sadly listened to his new album, Now, Then, and There, some bullshit. Like, it was just some, like, Paul McCartney BS. I mean, this is the guy who also, one of his famous songs is called Silly Love Songs. And the story behind it is he told a producer, like, I can write a hit song in 5 minutes. And that was the song. And the chorus goes, I love you. And it was a hit. So it's just like,
it was this a hit because guy. He's Paul McCartney and it's the Beatles. It's not a hit because the song's good. And people need to have that. People admittedly need to have that disconnect, because if you're going to be someone who analyzes music objectively, which I guess is so difficult for some reason, I don't understand how it's difficult, because if you have a song that is basically just atonal vocalizing like that, I'm assuming there's lyrics, but
yeah,
it's not good compared to what people remember.
Question.
So play the songs that people remember.
Who's more self-important about the Beatles? The Beatles or the Beatles fans? Like, I
feel like the Beatles fans are just old souls. Right?
I was volunteering for a music thing for kids one time. And they were like trying to figure out what like songs to play at their performance. It was just this community music thing. And they're trying to like list through current pop songs that were going on. There's like a lot of Imagine Dragon stuff. It was Fall Out Boy stuff. It was that kind of music that like you could easily quickly do an arrangement for that kids could play. So kind of poppy stuff. And like every single time that they tried to get us pick a song, and this was like over multiple days too, one of the moms in the back, she's just like, you could do something Beatles or Paul McCartney. Like every fucking time. Stop it. The kids don't give a shit about the Beatles. Fuck off. This is not for you. God damn, I hated her.
The literally, only time,
every time I it would... was the same. It was the same like kind of cheeky like, oh, I've got a suggestion for you. You're going to love this one. I bet you haven't thought of this. You could do the Beatles or maybe a little Paul McCartney, you know, just think about it. I bet
you could do the Yellow Submarine. It'll take me back to the time I did acid for the first time. Like, yeah, parents are going to like.
Dude, yeah, I know this banger. Like, hey, Jude. Yeah.
So like whenever I think of like very self-important Beatles fans, I think of that. But like, do that's you guys fair. Think that the Beatles are like as significant as they are? Do you feel like they deserve academic study and rigor that they do now? Like, there's college courses exclusively dedicated to them and the study of them. Like, I get maybe a chapter in a history book or a little section in a history book, but like, do they deserve, do you think, a whole ass like 10-week course with questions and tests and homework and essays specifically devoted to them? Because there's college, like, kids were crazy about this course. Like, I obviously didn't take it because I don't give a shit about the Beatles and I needed to take other classes.
There's college courses dedicated to Star Wars, and that's a reality that doesn't exist. So I would
not. The Beatles like are worth
to,
it.
Yeah, I would like to give the C lazy answer of no IP is safe. But if you do have a band that, you know, define genres throughout the decades, then yeah. But you're exactly right. I don't think that an entire anthology of it needs to be studied unless it's outside of academia, unless you're buying the book singularly not to write papers about or to learn about it, unless you're learning about it on your own.
Like, to put it in context of something that I like and not just shitting on the Beatles, like there's colleges that like teach courses on like the science of Batman, which is like, ooh, that sounds cool in its face, but like what the fuck, like
I can't need a course with prep time. He does everything.
Prep time does everything. Yes. But like, I could be taking a class that I need But then there's this class. It's like, why? I mean, it's probably just like prereqs undergrad shit that like doesn't matter anyway.
Yeah.
But also, like, you don't need to take the class. It's not actually rooted in science. There's no such thing as a Lazarus pit. Batman would have died so long ago.
You just
Batman
take a...
would not have survived all those hits and injuries.
You take one finance course and it's being taught by Ringo's son, who's like big into crypto. So hey,
oh, no, that's God. John's son who's big into
crypto. Is that John's son? Oh, I'm sorry.
I kid you not. Yeah.
Oh man, I heard that. I was just.
I don't know because I and again. It is admittedly, you know, I'll say it. It's influenced by my, you know, I don't want to say fandom, but so be it. I don't know, because I can definitely get a sense of that timeless nature, and I feel like timelessness is one of those things I always bring up with anything, whether it's about history, Los Angeles, whatever it might be, but there is a quality to the music that, you know, for example, with a lot of the Beatles music, especially after they kind of stopped with their touring phase and, you know, they decided to get a little bit more experimental and they started introducing a lot more strings. I feel like by that point, you're entering a new realm of music and you really are reinventing yourself in a way that I think demands study, just because, okay, how exactly do you go from, you know, one of the pioneering rock groups of the mid-20th century to all of a sudden, you know, you've got strings being used for Eleanor Rigby or an orchestra blaring horns for A Day in the Life. And it when it reaches that point where it could almost be considered classical music, as weird, you know, with lyrics and guitars and sound effects, and again, I think Sebastian said it earlier, they really were, and this isn't me or my mom saying this, even though I have heard my mom say this, like, they really were ahead of their time, technologically speaking, and that's why George Martin, their producer, was typically known also as the fifth Beatle, along with Pete Best and Stu Sutcliffe, and that one Eddie Murphy SNL skit, but, you know, they really were pushing the limits of what music within that era could be. And yeah, you've got other bands that were trying to play with some of this stuff. You know, the Doors had their whole album, The Soft Parade, which was very orchestral. But, I mean, they were coming off the heels of the Beatles by that point. So, I don't know. Short answer, I don't know. I think it's worth it.
I agree. It's the most famous pop band in the world. You know, they're the biggest hit makers in the world. Lennon and McCartney are the biggest hit duo songwriters ever. Like, if in a time machine, you know, yeah, given this song, they could write a hit song in any era, and they've influenced everyone. Every hit song on the radio has probably been written by someone, even rappers and stuff. Like, every person that is on the radio has listened to the Beatles and has been influenced one way or another. Plus, culturally, too, you know, I think one of my favorite things about the Beatles is that they said they were bigger than Jesus and everyone freaked out. So, like, I kind of respect him for, like, also, like, being a little non-conventional. So I think they're worth it. Beatles fans, I wouldn't say so insufferable. They're you know, they're not exactly in the discourse of today on Twitter and stuff. So
I would say that they're more tolerable than the Beehive or Swifties, honestly. But it's like they're so important.
It's funny though, because if you look up Beatles concerts, we're really getting into it. Like, if you look up Beatles concerts from the 60s, like, there's one where they play at Dodger Stadium and it looks like a Simpsons skit because the stage is so tiny in the big stadium. And they're like, you know, la da da. And like, the women are screaming and it's like you can't even hear it. And it's like a different era, but. Yep. You know, Swifties sing along, but like, I don't remember anyone else ever since before or after the Beatles that loved them so much that you couldn't even hear them sing. It was just girls screaming. And, you know, that's a whole nother conversation of like cultural revolution and things like, and, you know, like all kinds of stuff, but, their cultural impact is undeniable as much as some people hate them.
It's just a different leg of the Eras tour.
Paul McCartney seeing Swift and be like, you know, like Paul's version.
Oh,
It's just all AI clanking.
Red submarine, yeah. Apple parentheses red, yeah.
So yeah, I overall, you know, is it something that people should check out and listen to? Of course. Does it take away from any other quote unquote last Beatles song that came previously? No. And honestly, is it going to be one of those songs that's going to be remembered? Like, I mean, even the end, I don't know if it was The Simpsons. There was some TV show of the last like 40 years that made a reference to that song. And me being the nerd that I am, the Beatlemaniac that I am, as Nick Cage would say, in The Rock, I'm such a Beatlemaniac, I immediately recognized it when they referenced that song. So, you know, it's not going to be up there with Strawberry Fields Forever or I Want to Hold Your Hand or Good Day Sunshine, which is one of the worst Beatles songs I have ever heard. Yellow Submarine is up there.
Obli di obla da.
Yeah, I mean, that one, there's at least one version of that that I can listen to and get a laugh out of, just because John just doesn't care. And by the end of it, he just goes and he's like all the way, he's all the way back here and he's like, obla di obla da, brother! So, but otherwise, my whole floor thinks I'm insane.
You are, though.
So how loud did you put the Now and Then song? Did you put it all the way up? Did you let the bass rumble?
Almost. I mean, I just jammed those AirPods in here until I could hear barely my own heartbeat. So
you got to do it like a rap song, let the windows rumble with that bass for the song.
Oh, geez. So, yeah, anyway, you know what? All right, the song is out. Okie dokie.
It could have saved us an hour just by saying that. It was all right.
I know. But you know what? This was a good discussion. And you know, I mean, hell, this conversation alone was testament enough to just the Beatles' legacy and even questioning that legacy. Honestly, I think that's well worth talking about, because there are a lot of people that are the three of you guys aren't like me, and I love that. So, mm-hmm. You know, getting to have that conversation with people is great. You know, there's people out there that are like, oh, it's easily the Rolling Stones, because there's no way Paul McCartney would write Rape, Murder, It's Just a Kiss Away, you know, and so, with Gimme Shelter. So it's, and it's understandable, but at the same time, you know, the Beatles weren't all She Loves You and I Want to Hold Your Hand. And even John said that at one point. He had this aggressive interview where he was like, do you just want me to cut my hair and sing I Want to Hold Your Hand day in and day out? No, that's not what I want to do. So he did cut his hair, though, and then he grew it back out again. But anyway, gentlemen, this has been an excellent, excellent discussion. Matt, I am so happy to have you back. And Sebastian, I am also very much happy to have you back.
I was only gone for 2 weeks.
I know, but
it's good that we got reunited before the Beatles did. So if there's anything that could be taken from this, it's that.
No, a hologram John Lennon is already being worked on for Coachella.
Well, I mean, one of us wasn't assassinated, so.
That's what I was thinking. Like, yet. The TikTok remixes, like, people are going to be like, you know, like,
yet.
Please don't shoot me. Like, they're going to do, like, weird lyrics and stuff like that on TikTok, because they do it for other songs. Like, I was just thinking of the Nirvana Batman song, you know, like, on TikTok, they're like, something in my ass. And I'm like, they're going to totally do this for the Beatles song. So,
yeah,
I'm stuck in my head.
I'm not looking forward to the edits on TikTok this is going to spawn, as well as the main character syndrome that plagues these TikToks, you know, thinking that not only is Paul McCartney self-important, the people sampling this song on their TikToks are also self-important, as if we have a stake in their lives. You know, at least Paul gets paid for the shit that he produces. So I'll step off my soapbox here, and it's great to be back. It really is.
Yeah, I definitely want to extend a very heartfelt appreciation to have you back, and also just, you know, Sebastian, I said this to you off air the other day, but getting to listen to our Falling Middle cast episodes has probably been, if anything, some of the best times I've had going back and listening to the show, just because it is you and I, in many ways, completely unhinged post-2020, but also, you know, grappling with our own existence in a way that I think neither of us could have been prepared for, but both of us were passionate about, and both of us finally said, okay, mask off, this is what we have to say about not only what Barbara Ehrenreich has to say, but this situation that we are all experiencing, and where do we go from here? So it's probably the most polemical we've ever gotten, but it's also as OG Mars on Life as it gets. So I think now there's 3 episodes of it left. So definitely, listeners, keep up with that. 3 more episodes of Falling Middle cast, and who knows, maybe there'll be another episode of something coming up soon. Vigia Games Part 3? Question mark? Andrew, you down?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we never talked about modern games like Starfield or something. Yeah, right. I'm not going to play Starfield, but sorry, Seb, if you like it. But yeah, there's always the door open.
You know what? If Todd Howard can get away with releasing the same game for 12 years, I'm not going to buy it on launch day. I mean, we'll save this discussion for another day, but I've learned since Fallout 76, you do not buy a game on launch day. You do not. So... looks good, but that's a conversation for another time.
And with that, listeners, so long.
Mars on Life is a podcast co-hosted by Sebastian Shug, Ryan Mancini, Andrew Martinez, and Matt Fernandez. If you like this episode, rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite shows, as Mars on Life is available on Anchor, Radio Public, iHeartRadio, Audible, Spotify, and Podchaser. Find us on Instagram at Mars on Life Show to keep up with the latest news, episodes, and gratuitous updates on the Red Planet. Have a question, comment, or request? Email us at marsonlife@gmail.com, and we'll promptly get back to you. This show's artwork, titled Happy Mars, was drawn by Zachary Erbrick. Our show's regular intro and outro music is Space Explorers by the one and only Kevin MacLeod. Thank you for listening, and always remember, if you keep going, you'll make it to Mars.